Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
All right, we are back. You are listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. Hey, if you want to connect with us here at the show, you can do so online 24 hours a day at www.steppinoutradio.com. Also, if you'd like to instant message us, you can do so by hitting up Yahoo, typing in Steppin' Out Radio as the user ID, and send us a quick IM. We'd love to hear from you. Also, if you want to connect with the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, just pick up your local phone book and go directly to Narcotics Anonymous, or you can go online to www.na.org. Next up, we got Bob. Bob, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you.
Thanks for coming to the show. Tell us a little bit about what it was like, what it's like now.
There was a big difference. Today, I feel freedom. I feel I can greet my neighbors.
Okay.
And I can hug my children, and I can hold my head up.
Well, let's start with what it was like.
What it was like? Well, it was like...
Do you remember before getting high?
I had my first drink when I was about 7 or 8. My family, we all lived in the same house, my grandparents, and my grandfather used to make homemade wine.
Yeah.
My father was an Italian barber.
Oh, okay.
And they used to have the wine on the table. And I drank a good portion of it. I fell down the steps, and everybody laughed and said, "You're just like your grandfather." And my grandfather was a drunk.
Mm.
So at least I had someone to identify with. I drank for a while, and I through high school, nothing serious. I was in that culture with the psychedelics and the pot and all that. It was just seemed to be a way of life.
Okay.
Met a girl, and was going to marry her, and things began to gradually change. I was the last one leaving for the night when everybody else would get home. I was hanging out at the bars. The relation got shaky, and she gave me back my ring and said, "I'm going to the East, to India, to find my creator."
Hmm.
And that was devastating for me because she was my whole world. I was angry at God, and I just got I figured, well, I'll just go on a tear. I bought a motorcycle, a new bike, and bar hopped, drank, did whatever drugs I could find. And one night, it was in July of mid-70s, and I got so plastered, and I left that bar and the bike, and I just opened it up, and I said, "All right, God, let's get it on." And I thought I was on a night on a charger, and I challenged God himself. And I seen the light of a headlight coming at me, and I don't remember much except them taking me to the hospital, and I was a year and a half out of work on that one.
Wow.
I didn't stop. I just try to control it more. I would work. I put some money aside and come the weekends. It was 2-3 day binges.
Are you talking strictly about drinking at this point?
Yes, strictly drinking.
Okay.
I was shaking in the morning. People would tell me I would shake. I'd miss a lot of time from work. I met another girl, and you know what? Sometimes when you're sitting at the end of the bar, there's another one sitting next to you, and you know what? Misery loves company, and that's what happens. I met another addict, an alcoholic. We hooked up together, and a great way to start a life, but that's what we did. She had a kid, and we moved in the house that I was living in the basement. And one night coming back from a after hours club in New York City, I fell asleep again at the wheel. I don't know how many accidents I had.
Hmm.
And I tore the side of the car up with the fire hydrant. And it was Halloween Eve, 1981. And I remember on Halloween Day, she was so furious, I had to take the kid trick-or-treating. And I shook so bad, but I did it because I felt so bad. But that evening, I got my first introduction to 12 Steps. A meeting when two people from AA came and 12-stepped me and put me in the back of their Volkswagen and took me to a meeting. It went around the meeting. I remember I was sitting there, and the people would tell their time at that particular meeting. I have so many years of this. And when it got to me, I said, "Well, I only had a drink a few hours ago," and they applauded it. But I said, "I don't have a problem," and I got up and threw up.
Okay.
And next day, they made me make coffee at the meeting. And on 90 days, I wore a jacket and tie. My parents came. Everybody was weeping. And
was that going to be the last time you got high or drank in 1981?
No, that's not the last time. 2 months later, my sponsor, who I had, came up to the pizzeria and said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I'm working this part-time job because I need money, man. I can't be sober without money." And he would come up every so often. He said, you're not making meetings. But I said, money is more important. And, you know, I showed them. I didn't go to any meetings in 2 years. I made 2 years clean. My kid got left back. The wife picked up drugs. And I thought everything was good. And I think it was at my brother's wedding, a toast at my brother's wedding. That was okay. And then it was off to the races again for the next several years with cocaine and crack thrown in.
Talk to me about the drugs.
Well, you know, whenever I drank, I always drank before, and I always finished off with booze after. Cocaine, and I would do as much as I could afford, and that was quite a bit. I tried to sell it, but I was the best customer, and, and my wife was my best client.
Okay.
So there was never enough to go give away. It was always running into the bathroom with the kid banging on the door. What are you doing in there? You know, what are you doing on there? And it was horrible. It was horrible. I had my daughter at the hospital. I remember I went to pick my daughter up at the hospital. I couldn't drive her home. My baby and my wife's holding my baby. I was up on a 3-day binge, a crack binge. I could just about make it home. Going, God, please get me to home.
When did you go from give us the progression here. Like you're drinking, you start doing a little bit of coke, I guess, and then when are you smoking crack? Give us some, paint the picture.
You know what? That picture was a decade, and I can't even tell you when it started and when I could tell you when it ended, but it just seemed to, whenever you had money, that's what you did. It was at the point that I would put money in the kid's piggy bank, and by the end of the week, remember what I put in so I could figure how many beers I'd get and how many I'd get back from the bar. And the words that I dreaded the most were "ask for." I mean, that used to scare me. But anyway, and it hit its peak in Thanksgiving 1988. When they threw me in a county jail with a restraining order.
What'd you do to deserve that?
Well, the wife couldn't take it, threw me out of the house. The police came, and I had assault charges on them, and they threw me in the county jail, and it was crowded. It was Thanksgiving. And it was in this holding cell that the brothers in there took the biggest white guy, and they tried to shove him down the toilet. And they did a pretty good job. And I was, prior to that, I was banging on the walls. I'm going to get my wife. I'm going to get this cops. I'm going to get this one. And the next thing I know, they're circling me and pushing me back and forth. Your wife, your wife. And I got on my knees and said, God, help me. Cops came in. Everybody was broken, taken away. And here I was in this holding cell. And I felt like I was choking. And I felt like I was drowning and I was going to die. And something happened. I had my awakening right there. It felt like a great burden was lifted off me. I was able to go to sleep, and the next day I asked for a cigarette, and I got bailed out, and I went to my first meeting since 1981. It was in 88.
Bob, let me ask you a question. I want to see this. How? What got you into jail? What? Give me the whole circumstances around this.
Well, the wife said to me, you're not ruining another holiday.
Okay.
You're out of here. I was already drinking early.
Give me that. You know what? Give me the whole day. Give me the day.
Well, I know
you got up that morning and did what?
Started drinking. I was off from work. I had drank the night before. I was already continuing my drinking. There was things being cooked. There was people coming over. There was booze everywhere.
So you're a drunken, sloppy mess.
A sloppy mess. I was abusive. I was an abusive man.
Verbally or physically?
I was abusive to my wife.
Physically.
And I was abusive to my children.
Physically.
Emotionally to my children. Physically to my wife.
Okay.
And she wasn't going to put up with it, and she told me to get out. She put a restraining order on me. And I remember I went next door to my brother's house. It was right next door, and I'm looking out the window. Furious. How can I come? I can't come into my own house. This is my house, and I can't come in. I'm the one paying for this. Well, I remember walking down the avenue and going to a couple more bars. And then I made my way back to the house. And I remember trying to kick in the door, and the next, the police got me all over, and they're taking me, and I'm actually swinging. And they put me in the local jail, and then from the local jail, they brought me to the county jail. And that's where this incident happened, where I had my awakening.
I mean, so you're totally intoxicated at the point where they're putting you in jail, though, right?
Yes, in a rage.
And in a rage. Did you know that did you know you were an addict? Did you know you were an alcoholic?
No, one day, I remember the wife said, I'm going to bed. I said, okay. And as soon as she waited, I waited up to see her go up the steps, and then I opened the door slow. I cracked it. I opened the gate so it wouldn't creak. The creek was like a mile long, and I started walking up the street real fast. When I finally got away from the house, I was almost near the bar. I looked like down at my feet. I said, "You could slow down." My feet wouldn't slow down. They were way out in front of me. And I said, "Maybe I got a problem." And then I waited, and when you go in the bar, the first thing you do is look for the best seat because you ain't moving. You want to be comfortable.
Right.
And I had some inkling then, but I did not. I was in denial.
Let me understand this correctly. You were like circled by a bunch of guys, and they were gonna do a number on you, and you were terrified, and you hit your knees, and you threw up your hands, and you said, "I surrender."
You know what? That surrender, it just... I didn't know what else to do. When you get to the point where your head is down and you're hopeless, what else can you do but ask for help? And it was there all the time. But it felt like if you were swimming and somebody pushes your head down under the water and you go to go pick up and you can't pick up your head, it's like you start to panic. And that's exactly how I felt. It felt like in another second, my mind would just explode.
Really?
And so I cried out with as much earnest and sincerity as I could. And it was relief instantly. It was no great light, but there was a peace that came over me. And I knew that it didn't come from me. That was the other gift that... What if I thought it came from me? I would have been still out there. But the gift gave me the idea that it was something not me. And that was an important part of my awakening.
So how did you know that was real when you felt it?
Because I was...
Like, how did you know it wasn't just you being high?
It was from rage to hopelessness to peace to surrender to... breath of fresh air. It was a breath of fresh air. I was able to lay my head down in that jail, and I was able to sleep, and I woke up with some clarity. And I thanked my family for not bailing me out because they were afraid to bail me out. You know, let's leave him in there. This guy's an animal. You know, that's what had become. I had turned into an animal, not even human. I was an animal. Mm. And they left me in there, thank goodness. And when I got out, again, I made the decision I needed help, and I realized what I was. That awakening made me see what I was. That was the key. It made me realize, my God, it was like looking at it from a whole different angle.
Did you had no idea, though. Like we were talking about that before the break. You really had no sense that you were an addict up until this?
No. And I just,
this point.
Just on my past, I will say this. And I say that to the listeners. If you're out there and you're stealing from your children's purses or piggy banks, you're abusing your children verbally, you're beating your wife, you're walking around thinking that the whole world's against you, you're sitting at the end of the bar dreaming and doing nothing, there's DWIs, there's restraining orders. There's so many blackouts that you can't even remember what days it are. If you got to wait till nighttime to leave your house with your head down low so you don't meet your neighbors, then there's something wrong. And that's what was wrong with me.
Mm.
It was like you have to be hidden all the time. I was not drinking in nice places. I was drinking in the place that you would never find me in. And even there, they threw me out. I used to go some nights and figure, which bar am I going to go get tonight? I think I got thrown out of that one, this one, that one, this. Horrible, horrible. But anyway, I had this awakening, and I went into a meeting the next day, and when
How?
It came to me.
How'd you find that meeting?
I called AA.
You did?
I called AA, said there's a meeting in town here, 8 o'clock, and I went, and when it got to me, I said, I'm back. And then I picked up the greatest piece of literature I've ever picked up. In 12-step, and that was a meeting book. I don't know. I couldn't read. What the hell did I know reading? But I could follow where the meetings were. And that was, I would circle each one each day. And somewhere, going from one meeting to another, I heard 90 days, I joined a group. And that's what I did. I went to my first business meeting, and an old-timer sat across from me and said, "Hey, kid, how much time you got?" I said, I got about 4 months. He goes, you're going to run the speakers meeting. I said, I can't do that. I can't. I can't do that. He said, why not? It'll be good for you. I said, no, please. And he gave me the keys. And that was probably the greatest act that the fellowship has ever did, give me the opportunity to do service, because it lifted my head off the ground. When I walked into the rooms feeling less than human, it was the recovering addict and alcoholic that greeted me with kindness and compassion and made me understand I was not alone.
And that lets you know that you were trustworthy as well.
And loved me before I could love myself. I never forget that. There was no great speeches. People didn't come up and say, you should do this. They looked at me and they understood. And they grabbed my hand. They smiled. They patted me on the back. They gave me a cup of coffee. And that was so in need, because there was nobody left that would even look at me.
How'd you come into Narcotics Anonymous?
I went into both fellowships, but I went into AA, and then I eventually had to deal with some of my drug issues as well, and I spent some time in NA. And after about 2 years in the fellowship, I joined a little community acting group. I wanted to explore a little bit. I was like a thirsty kid. I just didn't know nothing. I was hungry for knowledge. If anything, recovery gives you a great appetite for knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of energy. I wasn't lying and cheating and stealing now. I had more energy. Mm-hmm. Things were better at work. The home front got better. The kids in school was doing well. And I went to this acting class in this little community theater, and I said, wow, I'd like to do something. And I began to write a play. I never wrote nothing. I wrote a play. I was on my job. I wrote a play. And as I was writing it, I couldn't write anymore. You know what? Another failure, I thought. And I got on my knees in this cage. I used to take the stuff that would come down the chutes from the machine shop, down the chutes, and put them in these cages. And I was in this cage where I was writing a play. I got on my knees and again asked God for help. And I had another awakening. I was able to finish this short play. I went to a couple of community theaters and colleges. They said, forget about this. You can't do this. It's about a drug and alcohol addiction. We don't want to hear this. It's too real, too harsh. But it got in the hands of another addict who passed it on. And he passed it on to a 12-step H&I committee, Hospital Institution Committee for NA.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, wow, this is good. Can you do this? I didn't know no actors. I didn't know nothing. I didn't know how to direct. So I went into the rooms of recovery programs, and I said, would you like to join this troupe I'm doing? And churches donated space. In September of 1991, we performed our first show at Integrity House, a rehab in Sea Caucus. And the 20 men, woman troupe then, which is still 20 men, women today, it was unbelievable. There were men weeping. There was men weeping. The play dealt with bottoms. The spiritual awakening and coming into rooms of 12-step programs with all different kinds of scenes of people hitting their bottoms. And since then, it's continued, and it's reached 20,000 people with a crew and cast coming mostly from recovery centers and recovery rooms who are anonymous,
mm-hmm.
who do not accept payment, and who've declined media publicity. But we've made our way to 5 or 6 states.
Have you?
Yes.
Wow.
And it has been what a wonderful journey to go into these rehabs and shelters and prisons where we go and see these people, because it is makes you humble. And they're standing up applauding us, but in reality, it's we who want to applaud them. We realize, maybe we didn't realize then, we knew there was something, but now we realize that those people in the rehab centers and the shelters are being carried like we all were.
Mm.
And it's our way to give back to the one that is carrying them. And so we're honored to be there. We are continuing our efforts. But anyway, and the reason I bring up the play, because it's so dear to me, is that the opportunity to give back is such a great part of my recovery. And so my focus has been mostly on recovery. What I was is not what I am today. That recovery is absolutely, truly possible. I've met so many wonderful people. There have been over 300 people who have joined our troop now. And we never say no to anyone. Come along with us. And my God, they're talented. They have all kinds of emotions, pain and despair. But mostly the hope that comes from recovery, that and the passion of it. But I'm honored, and I'm honored that my friends here today are part of part of the program as well.
Sure. No, that's great, Bob. Listen, thank you so much for sharing with us. Once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out.